And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. On Sundays, we are broadcast at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., 12 hours apart. And then a few hours later, we are broadcast at 1 a.m. Monday morning. We stream live at those times, and we have a link on the homepage. Matter of fact, we have a link on all of the pages at richarddugan.com for you to click on to listen to that stream. And then we put the podcasts up at the radio shows page, the richarddugan.com radio shows page, as well as SoundCloud and also iTunes. So you have lots of different opportunities to listen to it, so to speak, live, as well as listen to the podcasts. And we also encourage you to do just that because sometimes these interviews run long, really long. An extra 20 minutes, maybe an extra 30. All depends upon the availability of our guest. And sometimes we get them for quite a bit, and we're very grateful for that. Other times, hey, they've got other things they've got to do. It was fun, but I got to go do laundry or take out the cat, whatever the case might be. So please, and we'll also be linked to our guest's website. We'll be giving you that address here shortly as well. And actually, it'll be easy enough because it's a returning guest, so we're very excited about that. Also want to remind you, too, that if you like what we're doing here, if you're encouraged by what we are putting together and putting on the air here, we are very grateful for any kind of support we can get from you. It is not a prerequisite in terms of, oh, my God, if we don't get your support, the program's going off the air. No. I would never pull a stunt like that, and that's what that is. I worked for Christian radio for 15 years in the 80s and 90s, and that was a stunt they pulled pretty doggone regularly. And I swore I would never, if I can't afford to put the program on the air, it won't be on the air, period. I'll let you know. But I'm not going to threaten anybody with anything. It's up to me to make this happen. But if you would like to support what we're doing here, we would gratefully appreciate that. There's a mission page on the richarddugan.com radio website. And if you read through the information I've put there about what we're all about, at the bottom there is a PayPal link. You can go there and you can support us in that regard. And any amount is welcome. We're always looking for a minimum of 75. But hey, you know, we'll take what you have to offer, as well as energetic support. We're always in favor of that, as well as for our guests and what the work that they're doing as well. So please do what you can if you can, and we thank you so much for participating in the program in whatever way that you do. Take this information, run with it, make it your own. That to me is critical for you to make this your own. It doesn't belong specifically to our guest. It doesn't belong to me. It's something that you have to take within yourself and evaluate. There are so many different methods of doing that. Use your intuition. There's also what's called kinesiology. That's a fun one. Your body won't lie to you. I guarantee you. Just check it out. Some of our guests actually teach kinesiology, so it's kind of an interesting process. So be that as it may, that's where we are today, and that's what we want to encourage you to do. Here we are. We've already begun our 12th year of broadcasting. 12 years. We're entering the 12th year. We just celebrated our 11th anniversary of doing Tell Me Your Story. And I'm going to be celebrating my 40th anniversary being in broadcasting next August 29th. That's 2019. I can't believe I started this business at the age of 19. Oh, my gosh, how time flies. Today's program is going to be a lot of fun. I absolutely love having folks on who have this gentleman's acumen, his background, his information. He basically started his adult life as an ordained rabbi, and I've talked about this time and time again. You think you have a PhD in whatever it is or a master's? Think again. I have to tell you, based upon what little I know, but what information I have gathered, to become a rabbi is no easy feat. We may talk about that a little bit. He also became the spiritual leader of Temple Beth Shalom in Lake Mahopac, New York. I'm going to get a correction on that from my guest in a moment. Eventually, he resigned his pulpit to become a movie director. We'll find out maybe what movies he's produced. And he has directed and he has produced 15 feature films, most of which have had psychological, spiritual, and or social themes in spite of their commercial categories. Herb Fried, welcome back to the program. I always love talking with you. You are a lot of fun to have on the program.
Well, it's such a pleasure to talk to you, Richard. I mean, first of all, one more year, you're going to have a bar mitzvah, you know.
Your turn. And I'll be a man.
But, you know, it's always, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. I mean, you know, when I think about you and what and your background and how you grew up and the fact that I'm sure your listeners know that you were visually challenged as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And you went through all that, and you became what you are today. And for 40 years, you've been talking to people about important events, and I think that's wonderful.
Well,
and I'm very grateful to be your guest today.
I appreciate that. By the way, did I pronounce that lake correctly?
It's Lake Mahopac.
Mahopac.
It's an Indian name, so who knows if that's the right name.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. It was a very small but idyllic town north of New York City.
Mm.
And it was an amazing event for me because that was my first and only real pulpit, you know, when I was an ordained rabbi. I'm still ordained. I mean, nobody took it away from me, but I don't practice that anymore.
Right. But am I pretty correct in my understanding that it is no easy feat to become a rabbi?
You're right about that, but then, you know, somewhere around what it takes to become an eye surgeon or a brain surgeon. I mean, you study a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that when you're acquiring particular skills, it's one thing. Rabbinical school really is a matter of understanding. Not only the Gospels and not only Torah and not only the Talmud and that, but you study humanity. And you study the evolution of our brain, of our soul, and you have to really dig very deep to deal with the concepts of good, of evil, and taking on responsibility for your own actions and for your own thoughts. So in that regard, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Because you have to be willing to expose yourself, your brain, your heart, to who you really are and what you can really become. And when you find out what you can become, there's no way you can justify leaving it.
Yeah.
I left it because it was overwhelming for me.
Mm.
But I was there for 3 years.
Yeah.
And when you're dealing with people who live through every phase of life, and you accompany them through birth, through illness, through marriage, through all the other terrible things that can happen in life, and you deal with the idea of faith and your obligation as a human being. You know, I think that the Bible, as far as I'm concerned, is really one phrase: I am my brother's keeper.
Hear, hear.
And once you think of that, I am my brother's keeper, it's your responsibility to do everything you possibly can, in whatever way you can, to make this a better world. So that's a tough haul. I mean, that's a tough job.
Yeah. You know, I think, too, of people who aren't living by that at all, and I think of a certain group, whether it be in Sacramento or, what is it, Albany is the state capital?
Yeah.
Where the legislature meets.
That's
or
right.
Washington, D.C.
Oh, boy.
Their phrase isn't, I am my brother's keeper. Their phrase is, I am my brother's keeper. And I'm going to keep them right where they are so that they can do what I want them to do.
I love it. I love that pun. Can I use it?
Absolutely. It's yours. It's yours. But by the same token, I also encourage people to remember, and I phrase it this way intentionally, that there are no coincidences. There are coincidences.
Beautifully said.
And that we have what we have right now for a reason in this world. And that goes to a much deeper thing that we've talked about many times on this program. We don't usually get into current events, and we're not really going to dive into that per se. But I will say this much. The times in which we are living right now, and whatever detailed events that are happening, are not new. And I say that because I am going back, and I have been for years, and re-listening to over and over, because I love the music. The music that I listened to as a teenager, okay, and then a young adult. The songs are, if not as relevant, even more relevant than they were when they were first released, about the times in which those songs were written. Yep. And the struggles that we go through, and the frustrations that we face, and so forth, as well as the hopes and joys and the dreams that we have as well, and that's kind of what we're gonna talk about today as well. But I think that a lot of people, they want to, and this, I've seen this happen over the course of the last 40 years in this business, and especially the first 15 working at a Christian radio station, although that wasn't the first station I worked for, and how as those 15 years unfolded, certain events would happen, and the ministers and the pastors and the programmers would constantly be interpreting those events to fit their understanding of whatever the prophecy was, mm-hmm. you know, the predictions for our country and the world and so forth. And none of that ever came to pass. As a matter of fact, I did a little research a couple of years ago on one gentleman. His name was Edgar Weisenot. And in 1988, oh man, that's going back a few years, huh? 1988, he predicted, and I think it was in March or April, he predicted that September 16, 17, or 18, we were going to see the second coming of Christ. He was going to return to earth and then begin his earthly reign, and then 1,000 years, you know, destroying the devil, and 1,000 years of reign, so forth. September 16, 17, 18, 28, 1988 came and went, and we didn't. And a few months later, actually the following year, maybe early January, February, he raised his head again and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I made a mathematical error. It's this year, 1989. And September 16, 17, 18, 1989 came and went, and we didn't. And I never heard from him again, never heard of him or about him again until I did my research a couple of years ago, trying to find out, what happened to this guy? Where'd he go? And he died in the early 2000s. And the only thing that I could think of when I found out that he'd passed away was, well, at least now he knows the truth.
Yes, and will he ever reveal it?
Well, this kind of goes to what we are trying to understand not just about our world, because we've got a dilemma in this country right now in particular that I can't remember ever seeing that is challenging our trust and faith in the very institutions that we thought we could. Now, I'm not even talking of the government. I'm talking about, for example, the media.
Of course.
Now, it's not a question of they've done something that has caused us to distrust them. It is that we've had individuals who have been disparaging the media, saying that you can't trust them. They're all liars.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've had the accusation that our democratic process is rigged by the very person and group that occupy the White House and the executive branch today.
Well, yeah.
And I thought, wait a minute, if it's rigged, and this was stated before the election, and you lose, then you have justification and you can scream bloody murder.
That's logical.
But if you win, it's still rigged, which means that either you cheated or somebody else cheated, because you can't have it both ways. If I lose, it's rigged. If I win, it's not rigged.
Yes, but you see, that's logic.
I understand. And I'm an idealist, and you know that gets me in all kinds of trouble.
You have not only the right, you have an obligation to say these things. I mean, because you cannot simply say that there is no such thing as truth.
Right.
You cannot deny that. I mean, that's throwing us back to, look, I go back a little bit, I'm older than you, so I go back to you know, the days of the witch hunts of the communists. And
oh, I was afraid you were going to go back to the Boston Salem trials.
No,
please, don't. No, you're not that old. No,
we could go to a lot of these places, but you know, there was in fact, there was a movie made about it called Point of Order.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we had all the witch hunt, and everyone was saying, "No, there." Do you realize that our country is destroying itself? And he said, "What's wrong? Everybody works, everybody eats." No. There are too many communists, and the communists will all destroy us. And of course, they were all lies, and destroyed the lives of many people. We have the same thing happening now. Of course, the man's tutor was Roy Cohn. You know, the disgusting liar of a lawyer who is the mentor of our president.
Yeah.
And
well,
so, you know, that's kind of where we are.
Well, I want to jump then to another institution, and it's neither fortunate or unfortunate. I was a member of that institution from birth because my family raised us Roman Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this institution that we trusted our children would be safe and we would be safe and everything would be fine. And then in the 80s, 90s, and then here we are in the 2000s, we find out we couldn't trust them. And that faith has been breached, if you will, in many instances, or shattered. There are many people who are staying because they do firmly believe, they don't disbelieve the accusations, okay, it's that they believe that they can do more good to help heal the church than if they were to leave and abandon it.
Well,
you know, it's like, you know, a ship that's taking on water. I'm going to bail to try to help.
Yeah, each has a rationale.
Yeah.
And so you rationalize based on what you think you're capable of and what's in your best interest.
Exactly.
in many instances. Unfortunately, you know, when people achieve power, they are often, and I would say more than often, involved in seeking rewards for having achieved this.
Yeah. But you go through these different institutions, then the educational institution, in our country in particular, we have issues there. And I could continue on to our economic or financial institutions and so on and so on and so on.
Yeah.
So we have all of this turmoil. And then we have people who are so fed up that either A, they decide, I want out. And I mean, they want out all the way. This is not going off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
This is going off the planet.
I understand.
And then there are those who want to go off the grid. They want to live somewhere in the Ozarks or somewhere in the Appalachian Mountains or just get away from this nonsense. I can survive on my own and my family will be just fine. And you think about that and you think, that's kind of the way that it was, especially in the 1800s in this country, when you had people who moved west from the East Coast to live on the prairie or in the various parts of the wilderness at that time, wilderness, and they did just fine. You know, they had their children who became their sort of their co-workers, so to speak, as well as their family. And they all worked together and they farmed or raised cattle or other livestock or whatever is it that they did. And
well, I you know, have no objection to that, but it doesn't help you do what you were put on this planet to do.
There you go. That's it. Yeah.
In fact, if I can share a thought with you.
Please.
This past year, my first novel came out about a year and a half ago. It was called Bashert, which is a Yiddish word, which means meant to be.
And we have an interview with you on that book, too.
Yeah. Well, I promoted this book. I was sent all across the country. I was in 35 cities. And what you learn from people that you would never think of whose thoughts were, you know, esoteric or in any way different from the way you usually think. But it's amazing some of the things that happened. And I was thinking of one particular thing. I went into a town called Cleveland, Georgia. How the hell I got there, I don't know. But it was the host was a woman who had lost three children, three of her sons. And it was a most amazing thing. And as we were talking, at one point she looked at me and she said, "Okay, I see what you've done with your life. I see what you did when you were young. I see what you did over the past few years. I have one question for you. Why are you on this planet at this time?
What a question.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. And this was, you know, Cleveland, Georgia. You know, and someplace I would never go or never heard of. But there are people, see, the assault on us is so heavy and so mean and so cruel that we tend to say, you know, like you were just talking about, let's go up into the mountains and, you know, plant corn. But this particular woman and a lot of people that I've spoken to say, it's terrible now. So we can either run away or try to make it better than we can. Mm-hmm. Just try to make it better. And I'm so impressed with that. I mean, that's the kind of thing that instills hope in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope it bears fruit before I kick the bucket.
Well, you and me both. I remember interviewing a visionary futurist who had designed the cities of the future and civilization. I mean, he had it all mapped out and so forth. Not necessarily a utopia, but it certainly made a lot more sense than what we're doing today.
Mm-hmm.
He's since passed, and his name is Jacques Fresco, and one of his premises was that there was a three-pillared civilization, and one of those pillars was it was a resource-based economy. It wasn't money.
I didn't hear that much.
It's a resource-based uh-huh. economy, meaning uh-huh. that the resources belong to all the people. You still have to have distribution, but the distributors will not own it or control it. They will distribute it.
I've never heard that expression.
Yeah.
Wonderful expression.
It's very interesting. Now, some will say, oh, it's socialism, that's this, that's that. Well, you know what? Quite honestly, there are other ways of living other than what we've got that would be more equitable for all people, but we're not going to go into that on this program.
Yeah.
Anyway, he and I chatted about this, and I says, I like it. I really like what you have to say, Jacques. Is this going to happen in my lifetime or yours? Well, he was 94 when I asked him the question, and he says, well, I don't think it will happen in mine. As a matter of fact, I'm almost certain it's not going to happen in my lifetime, and it probably won't happen in yours. And I was in my late 40s, early 50s when I interviewed him, right?
You might still make it.
Yeah, and I'm going, really? And he says, and here's the reason why. Because until man rises up in his consciousness to a level where he begins to see his fellow man and his civilization around him, his society around him, differently than he does today, differently in a positive way, this will never happen.
Oh, boy.
And so, you know, you take a look around you today and you're going, well, and it's never going to. But the reality is you just made a prime example of the fact that it is possible because you're coming across people who are saying, you know what, I'm not going to the mountains. I'm not going to live in a bubble under the sea. I'm going to, at the very least, I'm going to stay in the society. And I'm going to work with the people in my community, if my family and my community, my acquaintances, and so forth. And I'm going to do what I can to help them to better understand that there is another way, there's a better way, and we all have to work together. And by the way, I think I may have used this the last time we talked, but if not, I believe that if the good Lord, whatever you want to call the divine, I had intended for us to live solitary lives, I am almost certain that there are enough, I'll call them Class M planets, to borrow a Star Trek phrase, that you and I and every person on the planet to this date would be able to live a solitary life on their own planet. But the reality is that we're all here.
Well, you know, you just ignited a thought in my head that I hadn't been swimming around there for many, many years. It's a quote from the Talmud. The Talmud says that you will not achieve all the goals, the important goals, that you set for yourself in this life. On the other hand, you are obligated to continue to try. In other words, you can never give up. You must not give up. And when good people realize that, then we still have hope.
Mm-hmm.
We have to continue the fight.
Yeah. And it also answers that more pessimistic question I have asked of many of my guests. Does the human race really deserve to continue? I mean, look at the mess we've made of this place. We got plastics feet deep washing up on shore all around the world on the coastlines. We've got this and we've got that. We've got the other. Yeah, we've done a pretty good job of messing things up, but it's not over yet. It's not over yet. And so, yeah, we do have to hold on to that hope. We also have to hold on to our thoughts here for just a moment, because we're going to take a quick break here. I just want to remind our listeners that the other reason that we have Herb Fried here on the program is because he has another novel. It's a novel in stories called Fate. I love this title. Now, there is no question mark at the end of this. This is mine. Love, Faith, and a Pair of Pants? We're going to find out what the connection is to those three items. Two of these things belong together, but apparently all three of them do. We're going to find out what that connection is as we continue talking with Herb Fried here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're here with Herb Fried, and we're talking now. We're going to dive into his latest creation, Love, Faith, and a Pair of Pants. It is a novel in stories, and I'm assuming, because I haven't had a chance to read all the way through it yet, are these sort of standalone short stories, or do they kind of go, one goes into the next?
It's a novel in stories. In other words, It starts off with one character, and he's in his second year or third year of training to be a rabbi, and it goes through 30 years in five stories, and the very last chapter, it's love, faith, and a pair of pants. In other words, you must find love in life. You must have faith at some point. But on the other hand, you won't make anything if you don't have your pair of pants. So it takes us through this man's life, and the stories are all connected, but they're very different stories. Each one is a short story, and so it kind of holds on to it. It lives by itself, but each one also feeds what comes next. And so we've had some lovely chats and reviews on it so far. The book hasn't come out yet. It'll be out on October 2nd, but I've gotten just lovely responses because it's very funny, you know, in some parts, and very tragic. It's, in other words, it's like life, you know. It's funny, it's tragic, it's true, it's real.
I've always enjoyed not only reading but also writing short stories, especially in high school, and then of course I intentionally took an English course in junior college, and the first day they said, okay, here's the syllabus of what we're going to do, and you're going to also be writing five essays. I hadn't written an essay in my life up to that point. Didn't know what the formula was. But as soon as I found out what it was, and I wrote my first one, man, it was a blast. Of course, most of my essays had to do with Star Trek, and the metaphors contained there.
Star Trek,
yes. but nonetheless... Yeah, and I think that it also helps when they're short stories. It helps the reader too, because it's not like I got to keep reading to get to the end to see who done it kind of thing, right?
Oh.
You know, each one is going to have its own wonderful little message and sort of.
I read part of your bio, and I saw that you have this yearning to travel.
Oh yeah,
this love of travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that. As a filmmaker, I worked in making feature films for over 40 years. I was all over the country, all over the world. Excuse me. You know, I was in Italy, I was in Jamaica, I was in Guatemala, I was in Germany, and when I did commercials, I was all over this country. And the most amazing thing is travel. And when you travel, you suddenly, you know, it makes everything so much clearer, so much more, so much quicker. I love reading. I read all the time. And I'm moved by most of the books that I read. But experiencing the difference of manners, the difference of everything, the difference of the food, of the weather, of everything that you that you see, and the way people smile or don't, it's living through many different cycles. And I found travel was really essential. And quite frankly, that's what I use for my books. I mean, my first novel was, you know, Bashert, which is the love story. You know, goes through the life, much of the life that I lived, in many different places, many different countries. And Love, Faith, and a Pair of Pants takes us through 30 years of life, of living. And so that was the great joy of writing that.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that when we start looking at the ways in which we can participate in life and travel. Yes, I mean, my wife, first of all, I never thought I would ever leave the confines of the continental United States in my entire life, from a kid, teenager. But then when I married my first wife in 1993, her parents actually paid for us and their other children and their siblings to go on a cruise, a 7-day cruise, which was fabulous, which, of course, spurred us to then, a couple of years later, go on our own cruise to the Western Caribbean. The first one is to the Mexican Riviera. Well, I figured, okay, that was my adventure outside the continental United States. For some reason, you know, the continental United States, quote unquote, was like my home base or something, and this is where I would spend my days. And Phoenix, Arizona was going to be where I would live. I would be born, live, and die. Well, now I'm living in, of course, Central California. Well, I marry my second wife, and lo and behold, the next thing I know, a few years later, after we've met, we're standing in Ireland. I had no plans to go to Ireland, but I didn't want to leave once we got there. Well, obviously, we went a second time. I didn't want to leave then either, but, well, I'm back here in Santa Barbara, so obviously I left. My threat is basically that if you get me over there again, I'm not going back.
You're not coming back.
I'm not coming back.
Well, I think it's essential, you know, to change the atmosphere. I mean, what we talked about earlier about, you know, some of the horrors that really make us angry and make us, I don't want to use the word blind, but unable to really perceive. You know, it's just, we have to move out of that because you can sink lower and lower. And the simplest first step is to travel, to get out of your house, is to get into a new environment. And the way you describe, you know, your travels and the fact that you really, had you gone one more time, you'd live there.
Yeah. I would have torn up my passport. I'm sorry, sir, but without a passport, you can't get on the plane, sir. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm so sad.
I've heard of people dragged off planes. I've never heard of one dragged on.
Yeah, really. It's like, and then of course, I'm not sure because I haven't read my bio on the missions page in a while, but one of the dreams that, of course, my wife and I have, and of course myself for this radio program, is to travel the world interviewing people like yourself who are doing what you're doing, living your life's purpose, staying involved in civilization at whatever level, to make this a better place and to share that with the rest of the world, saying, hey, it's not over. It's not impossible. The only point at which it becomes impossible is when it is over, when we have actually gone extinct. Then it's over. But we're not there.
No,
and so
not.
There's always, I mean, again, and I hate to put it in this context, but I know that there are people who do not believe that we went to the moon. So putting that aside, if we can send a man to the moon and walk around and drive around in a car kicking up the moon dust, can't we then also solve the other problems, the challenges that we face?
We can.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, we must never give up. There was a...
Was that Winston Churchill?
I'm sorry?
Wasn't that Winston Churchill? Never give up, never give up.
That's exactly right. I was just going to say that in one of my travels, I shot some scenes in Germany. In fact, I did some weird commercials in Germany, in Munich. And one of the things I did was to look on, the concentration camps. And there was something of a song that was written by a small group in Poland, young Jewish men who and women who decided to fight the Nazis. And they had a song written about that, and they said that you must never ever believe that you're on the last road, never, never, never. And so they passed away, they died, but the road didn't close, the road didn't end. Yeah. Better things happened. Now some crappy things are happening, but we can't give up. We have to stay in and fight, do the best we can.
Yeah, and also remember too that it's all temporary. These situations, in spite of the fact that it seemed as though, and I'm going to use your example of Nazi Germany, for example, in spite of the fact that that seemed like that was going to go on forever, it was temporary. Every civilization, every kingdom, every dictatorship, every government, every religious institution, every financial, educational, whatever institution, they've all come and gone. And it could be, maybe it's cycles. I don't know. It's just, but that's the nature of this material world is that it's all temporal. And it's hard for us to see that, you know, when we have put on our microscopic glasses and we're looking at whatever the problem is that we're looking at. And because we can't see around us at all. My wife and I, for example, we live up in the rural part of Santa Barbara. And right now, and we've had on the property, we've had a beautiful family of deer. Now a deer.
Oh, my.
Now we've seen the buck, unbelievable set of antlers. Oh my gosh, incredible. I've only seen him once, and this was several years ago. But we know he's still there because Mama... We see her every year, and she's pregnant. And then she gives birth, and then we see the babies. And sometimes they're different ones. Now, we don't know if maybe the kids have gotten taken by predators, but Mama's still around and so forth. Well, that is part of the process of life. That's the cycle of change, not necessarily a cyclical process, but the cycle of change to we don't know what's next.
That's very beautiful.
And
very beautiful, Richard.
Yesterday we got up, we're getting ready for work, and my wife says, "Come here, look out the window. Come quietly." There was Mama and the two babies who were almost as big as her, but I knew they weren't even more than a few months old. There they were, chewing on the dry grass and so forth, and they looked up, and then we're heading out the door to go to the car very quietly. And they stayed. They didn't move. They were not afraid. And so I was actually able to get some pictures. I may have to post those up on my website. And I just look at that and go, nature. This is, and I would like for you to share with us your perspectives on this. My belief is that if we would but look at the natural world as our example of how to do things, and I'm not talking about predator prey part of nature.
Mm-hmm.
The one example I can think of is that I use quite often is what species other than man collects for more than a season foods that they're going to need? Not one. The only one that will collect for a season, or the only one I know of, is the squirrel. He'll store up nuts in a tree somewhere for the winter. But it's only for the winter. And then come spring, he's going to begin the process all over again, and that's just what he does. But what do? We collect for years and years, and we put be sure to eat by, December 16th, 2097. That's how long that'll last. The whole joke about Twinkies, But what about your feelings in regards to the natural world, especially in light of your beautiful educational process you've been through, as well as the writings that you've studied for years,
well,
and that aspect.
In addition, in my second year of college at Columbia, I was also taking lessons at the Jewish Theological Seminary. I was given a scholarship to study in Israel for 1 year, and those were very rough times. They were very poor. It was 1954, 55, and there was very little to eat. And I worked on a kibbutz, and the slogan was that each person on the kibbutz will give as much as they possibly can and will take only what they need.
Mm.
And they actually lived by it. The years that I was there, I saw no jealousy, no envy. There's people working together to build something, and they took what they needed for their family, and they worked as much as they could, and it was an amazing thing for me to have seen, that was a perfect setting for it, for what you're talking about. You know, just instead of just I want more, 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 until you get how much more?
Yeah.
How much more do you need? And you look at the people who are on the dark edges of our politics, who are enormously wealthy, and who are not satisfied with their wealth and want to continue to expand it and multiply it, and so they take everything at the risk or at the cost of creating a lot of misery for people who work hard or who are not fortunate enough to have gotten rich.
Yeah.
I'm with you all the way on this, Richard.
Yeah. I remember back in the 80s and early 90s when I was working for the Christian station and observing the behavior, if you will, of the, especially the national televangelist, and listening to what they were complaining about. Now, back then, you didn't really have a whole lot of talk radio hosts complaining about a lot because they hadn't taken off quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
But you had a lot of the religious community. Boy, they were just railing about one thing and another. And I noticed some of them were railing about one thing in particular day after day, week after week after month after year. And the one phrase that came to mind, and it comes to mind when I hear certain phrases come from the East Coast there, is a Shakespearean phrase that, and I'm probably misquoting it, I've been told that I've left out a part of it, but this applies, I think. Me dost think thou protesteth too much.
I didn't hear that.
Me dost think thou protesteth too much. which I take to mean that you are protesting about something that you yourself are caught up in.
That's right.
And, of course, the televangelists, like the Jimmy Swaggerts in particular, those kinds of folks, they were railing against sexual immorality. And what did they get caught in? Sexual immorality.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
And all
the people who were just so vehement about our president who was accused of sexual misconduct.
Yeah.
And was impeached by the House.
Yeah.
And these very people who impeached him now say, well, what about what's going on today?
Yeah.
I said, well, they don't answer.
No, they don't. They don't. And
so,
and it's like we've gone...
It's a different kind of a world.
I mean, we've gone almost 2 years.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not going to cast aspersions per se. All you have to do is just, you know, look at it yourself and trust your gut, trust your intuition to tell you what's going on.
And never give up.
But at the same time, you know, I sat there and I listened to all of this and I thought, wow, you know, what a waste of energy and time and potential. I think, too, about those people across the globe who lose their lives for a myriad of different reasons. It could be conflict. It could be medical. It could be domestic oh, what's the opposite of tranquility? Domestic tranquility we don't have right now, but they're losing their lives. And the only thing that I can think of, aside from my heart going out to those who are left behind missing this person, is what a loss of potential and contribution to our civilization.
Yeah.
What could they have brought to our society that would have made it better, but and now they never will?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we see that all around us, but that, once again, doesn't mean that we are like them.
No.
We're not.
And also, again, it continues to give us hope. And I know there are people who are left behind who, some of them will actually carry on that person's mission in life. In honor of them, which, you know, it's a wonderful thing. I was interviewing a woman just last week in regards to the court systems and dealing with child sexual abuse and the horrific situations going on there. And I said, let me ask you, if you weren't dealing with this subject and you and your daughter was not had not been sexually abused and all of this stuff had not happened, what would you have done with your life? What other direction would you have gone? And that's kind of what I put to folks is if
I think you kind of indicated earlier that your belief, and I share it, is that there's a reason, there's a purpose.
Sure, absolutely, there is. But at the same time, that question still comes to mind.
Of course.
Because it's like, my gosh, if people would just, and again, I'm not talking about a utopia here. We're not headed there,
no.
But because people are going to be people, but we don't have to be quite so cruel and mean and nasty and vile. And
we don't have to take babies away from their parents.
Yeah. And we could be accomplishing so much more. I mean, my gosh, I'm so disappointed here in my late 50s that we don't have flying cars like they had with the Jetsons. I was so looking forward to that.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting too that as we move forward on this program that faith is faith and love actually go hand in hand. I'm trying to now remember the biblical passage about faith. Faith is the evidence of things hoped for.
You have faith in your wife.
Oh,
I know that.
Yeah.
I can hear it.
Yeah.
And she has faith in you.
Yeah.
And so there are other things I'm sure that you have faith in. So, you know, sometimes we get so upset and it feels so painful to be lied to so much that we just feel us. To hell with it, chuck it. But we really can't do that.
Well, one of the things that I have learned over the years, and maybe this is because of the bullying that I got in school, that when I come across, let's just say, Herb, you and I, Herb Fried is my guest here, the author of Love, Faith, and A Pair of Pants. By the way, the website is herbfried.com, H-E-R-B-F-R-R-E-E-D.com. But let me ask you something. You and I, we've known each other now you were on our program last year in July.
I remember.
And let's just say we'd had a much more continuous conversation and connection over the last couple of years. And you did something that some people might observe, well, that wasn't very nice, Herb. Why did you do that? And there are those who would say, you know, Richard, you know, just write him off. Just say goodbye to him and don't have anything to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and this, I take the same tack even with my ex-wife, who I find trouble using that term, ex, but yeah, there you go. I find that we tend to, we're such a disposable society that we throw away a relationship based upon a single incident, and maybe it's my naivete or my idealism, I tend to want to give people the benefit of the doubt, no matter how many times. And wasn't it Jesus who said, "You forgive your transgressor,
mm-hmm.
Not seven times,
right.
70 times seven."
Exactly right.
And that's 490. Now, if you can keep count.
Yeah, you have nothing to gain by being the righteous judge.
Yeah,
I guess the one word is life is a process.
Yeah,
and we just do the best we can.
Yeah, Well, I finally came to a point, and I'm trying to use this in my day-to-day world. And I would, and let's just say that same scenario between you and I. I would do my utmost, since I've finally come to this place, and there's another step beyond this, I'm sure. I would say, Herb, I forgive you for the wrongdoing that you did to me, and I forgive myself for allowing you to do that to me, or for allowing me to get caught up in the emotional, you know, falderall that sometimes accompanies stuff like that.
That requires a spiritual strength that you have to acquire, yeah. And I know you have. And maybe growing up with the difficulties that you were stricken with, maybe that sensitized you,
yeah.
And made you realize, enabled you to realize that you know that it's possible to overcome difficult things, and that the answer when you're in pain or angry. Is not just to walk away and throw things and tear things up.
Yeah,
that's the one thing we have to be very careful of, because that's a real danger today.
Yeah,
we just can't give up. We have to continue to fight. We have to continue to, you know, to do what we need to stay alive.
When my parents-in-law, when I found out that my ex-wife's father and mother had passed away. Father died of an aneurysm. Mother died 4 months later from a broken heart. And then her best friend died on the operating table in the middle of a surgical procedure.
Oh.
I didn't find out about that until 2 or 3 years later.
Oh.
I didn't go through much of a grieving process. I actually went straight to anger. I was at that time when I was told, I was just pissed. I was pissed because we spent 15 years together, 15 Christmases and Easters and holidays and other events and the birth of your nieces and nephews, and there was absolutely no consideration whatsoever. I mean, we didn't leave as mortal enemies in the divorce, and yet I was disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I was able to go into that space of grief and thinking, I mean, that's pretty damn sad that you lose both your parents. Mine are still alive. They're in their late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm very grateful that my mother and father are still kicking along. As a matter of fact, my mother celebrates her 84th on the 17th of September.
Oh,
my dad, just had his 87th on the 13th of August.
God bless her.
And
that's a gift.
By the way, anytime I think about that, I always remember the admonition of my father. He says, "You can forget Father's Day, and you can forget my birthday and Christmas and what have you, but if you forget Mother's Day or your mother's birthday, you will be hearing from me."
Well, your father was a wise man.
Yeah. So as we move forward here, faith and love go hand in hand. And faith is the evidence of things hoped for. And I'm trying to remember the rest of that passage. It just totally escapes me. Someone's probably sitting there going, how could you forget that, Richard, after 15 years? But the thing is that it's not based upon anything tangible. It's based upon what's inside of us. I have faith. I believe. I don't know. I'd like to know, but I don't yet. I have faith, and I believe that this is true, that this is the way things are, and I'm going to trust that it may be that way. And if I find evidence to the contrary or new information that helps me to expand...
Well, it's a challenge, you know.
Yeah.
We'd all like to think, you know, I want proof. But that's the essence of faith is trust and belief, and even when things look dark, you simply have to continue the good fight.
What was it that Jesus said to his disciples about that? He said something along the lines of, you know, you folks, you believe because you've seen. Blessed are those who believe, and they haven't seen.
That's right.
You know, and I always
the scripture.
Yeah, I always chuckle when I hear people wanting to use certain archaeological evidence to support their argument that their faith is the one and only. And I'm going, well, then it's not faith anymore.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think we've solved the problem.
So what's next for you? Have you got another book in the works, or have you got another film in the works? What's on your plate?
No, there may be a film, but it's too early to talk about. And I'm a little reluctant, because the beauty of writing books like Love, Faith, and A Pair of Pants, write the stories that I feel I want to tell, that I know something about. Or Bashert, the story of a single love of two people who meet and their eyes meet and they know forever, for all eternity, they are meant to be together. I can deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I start to make a movie, once again, I used to be able to do work as an independent and I could make the ones I want. Now I meet with these executives who tell me every 3 months there's a different executive. You know, what we need here is an insane grandmother, and what we need here is something else that's popular at the moment.
Yeah.
Here, somebody's got to start singing. So I'm trying to work my way through that to determine whether or not it's really worthwhile.
Right.
And if that doesn't work, I'm on to another novel, which begins where the last one ended. The Love, Faith, and A Pair of Pants are five stories over 30 years. And the next book, I'm not sure quite what the title of that's going to be. Maybe Love, Faith, A Pair of Pants, and A Skirt. I'm not sure. But it'll be an extension of the characters and the other people that we met. Because I do believe life is an extension. You know, and so we learn, each generation learns from the past. So that's kind of what we do. Mm. It's such a joy to talk to you. I could be here all day.
Well, I'll tell you, folks, and I don't think there's no spoiler alert here, but he says that his next book will pick up where the last book left off. The doctor turned to go, but Ben stopped him. Excuse me, Doc, may I borrow your cell phone? Doc handed him the phone, and he punched in some numbers and said, Aliza, it's Dad. Now you figure out how he got there. By picking up a copy of Love, Faith, and A Pair of Pants, a novel in stories by Herb Fried. I hope I didn't give anything away, Herb.
Oh, that's beautiful. I had such so much fun today. It's beautiful.
From humor to pathos and back again. Yes, folks, we did travel quite a ways, didn't we? But we're back again, and I thank you, Herb, for so much time and sharing with us on the program. And hey, you know, should you travel I don't know if it's 3,000 or 5,000 miles east coast to west coast, but whatever it is, should you find yourself out here on the west coast again, look us up. We'd love to have you in studio to talk more about this. I would love to shake your hand.
I would love to do that, Richard. You're an extraordinary man, and I love your program.
Well, thank you very much. And also, remind our listeners of your website. It's herbfried.com, herbfried.com. We encourage people to go there. We will be linked again to your website. And we also encourage people to go to the July 2nd, 2017, believe it or not, interview that we did with you on your first novel. And that'll be very exciting. And I may have done this back then. I'm going to do it again because, hey, sometimes the answers change. So I've got those three final questions for you. And the first one, of course, is who is Herb Fried?
Okay, that I've got to ponder. Herb Fried is someone who tries to do the best he can in this life, bringing awareness and light and love to wherever it's possible to do.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I hope to achieve. I hope to connect with kindred spirits who understand what it is that I'm trying to impart. I'm trying to get people to understand that there is love, even though it may seem distant or impossible even. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get them to see that there is a possibility for improvement in life, and that life, just being alive, provides great opportunities for us, and we have to exploit them.
And what is your life's purpose?
Ooh, I guess my life's purpose is to extend love, insofar as I can, kindness, love. Look by smiling everywhere I go to enable other people to smile back and to bring out just a little sparkle of joy. That's, if I could do that, I'd be very, very grateful.
By the way, great photograph of you both in the book, but also on your website as well. Nice hat. Well, thank you again, Herb Fried, for joining us here on the program. A reminder to our listeners that to hear the entire interview beyond the 50 minutes that you hear on the radio, go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, go to SoundCloud, go to iTunes, and also if you'd like to help to support this program, go to the missions page on richarddugan.com and support us in whatever way you can. And if supporting us by just listening is all you can do, hey, I'm up for that. So thank you very much for doing that. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.